When you look at a zoning map, it's pretty much all steel grids, concrete, physical boundaries.
Right. Yeah, it's very rigid.
Exactly. The expectation is just total rigidity. I mean, a city planner points to a little colorful square on a piece of paper and says, there it is. That's the commercial district. That's residential.
Like they're just pointing at a machine.
Yeah, like that is the city, full stop.
We're so trained to view cities that way, right? Through this lens of physical geometry and just pure economic utility.
But what if the real city is actually like entirely invisible to the naked eye?
Oh, I love that framing.
Right. So, welcome to today's deep dive, everyone. Today, we are radically redefining urbanism.
You really are.
We're going to look at the city not as this collection of concrete blocks or just some byproduct of industrial expansion, but as a living, breathing, emotional landscape.
Which is such a shift from how we usually talk about this stuff.
It totally is. So, whether you are listening to this right now from a high rise in a sprawling metropolis or, just a quiet street in a small town, our mission for this deep dive is to completely change how you view the pavement you walk on every day.
And to do that, we are using this really fascinating lens. It's a collection of written reflections and artistic concepts from an art book.
Yeah, a really incredible book.
Right, it's titled Trestio Pintura Artistica by the artist Jero Duque.
So, the traditional narrative we all learn in school about why cities expanded so rapidly.
It always comes down to economics.
Exactly. It always focuses on that massive shift from agrarian life to industry. Like, factories were built, labor was needed, so people just left the farms.
It moved to the grids and the city sprawled outward.
Right. And we still try to predict future growth patterns today by looking at, economic trends or transportation nodes.
Pure functional stuff.
Yeah, the purely functional mindset. But diving into Duke's work completely upends that.
It really does. He basically argues that urbanism isn't just about the physical space we build or the industries we flock to,
It's actually about the emotional luggage we carry with us into those spaces.
which forces a total reevaluation of the whole logic behind urbanism.
Yeah.
I mean, Duke just dismantles that sterile industrial definition.
And he replaces it with something so much more fluid.
Right. But to really understand the spaces he paints and writes about, we have to grasp this core concept that anchors his entire philosophy.
The concept of trestio.
Yes, trestio.
Okay, so let's unpack this for the listener. In a literal, everyday sense, trestio translates from Spanish to moving or transferring, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like boxing up your apartment and moving to a new neighborhood.
But dupe takes this really mundane word and turns it into this profound framework.
He really elevates it. He uses trestio to define what he calls the transit of life.
The transit of life.
Yeah, the constant, relentless displacement of our existence through time, places, and experiences.
So it's not just moving boxes.
No, not at all. It's moving your essence. And in his book, every single piece of art is this intimate record of that journey.
Because he's observing how people don't just passively sit in a space, right?
Exactly. They actively transform their environments just by existing in them.
And you see this brilliantly in his paintings about rural to urban migration.
Oh, definitely. Like the works campesina, which means peasant or farmer,
Yeah.
and Pueblo de Risaralda.
Right. And through these pieces, Duke addresses that massive agrarian shift we mentioned a minute ago.
Which is key here. Because when a farmer leaves the countryside and enters the sprawling industrial city, traditional sociology kind of just treats them as a blank slate.
Yeah, that old melting pot assumption.
Exactly.
The idea that the agrarian worker arrives, sheds their rural past, puts on a factory uniform, and just becomes this generic city dweller.
Right, like they're just raw material feeding the industrial machine.
Yeah.
But Duke's a concept of trestio completely rejects that.
He frames them as active agents.
Yes. The farmer arriving in the city does not vanish into the concrete. They adapt, sure, but they carry their history with them.
Their dignity, their specific way of being in the world.
Right along with them. So trestio is both transit and permanence.
Okay, let me try an analogy here. I'm thinking about this like bringing a family heirloom or a sourdough starter to a brand new apartment.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Right. Like you've changed locations. Maybe you're in a high rise now instead of a farm, but you are keeping your essence alive in this totally new ecosystem.
Exactly. And if we look at it in terms of technology, it makes even more sense.
Oh, how so?
Well, if the physical city, the buildings, the asphalt, the power grid is the hardware, traditional planners treat migrants like data just being stored on a hard drive.
Ah, I see where you're going with this.
But Trastio suggests the migrating people are actually an operating system update.
Wow, yes. The physical hardware stays exactly the same, but the software, the people's habits, their pacing, completely changes how the machine functions.
Exactly. The hardware is forced to adapt to the new software, not the other way around.
That is such a mind-blowing way to look at why cities grow the way they do. The city's identity is overwritten by the dignity of the people moving into it.
And this changes everything about how we predict future growth patterns. We usually just look at where developers are pouring concrete.
Right. Follow the money, follow the zoning.
But Duke argues we should really be looking at the cultural, emotional operating systems being installed by the people moving through it.
Okay. But if we take that logic to its natural conclusion, if human beings adapt and impose their identity onto their environment, it implies the physical infrastructure itself is kind of secondary.
It does. Okay. Which brings us to a wildly different landscape in Duke's work.
Right, one that does not look like a traditional city at all.
The Cienega Grande series.
Yeah, the Great Marsh or Lagoon in Colombia.
This is where that strict industrial definition of urbanism completely falls apart.
Because Duke explores a form of urbanism here where everyday life is organized entirely around water.
And we are not talking about, like, a scenic river walk next to a downtown financial district.
No, no. We are talking about a community built on stilt houses over a massive lagoon.
Right. And in his watercolors of this region, he basically ignores whatever meager formal infrastructure might exist.
He focuses entirely on the vitality of the space.
Yes. He highlights children playing, flying kites from the corrugated rooftops of these waterbound structures.
They're inventing their own entertainment.
Exactly. Building their own social frameworks in a place completely disconnected from modern digital infrastructure. I mean, there is no internet connection here.
Let's focus on that for a second, because the lack of digital infrastructure actually forces a physical communal bond, right?
Absolutely. Because they aren't plugged into a globalized grid, their immediate physical environment becomes the absolute center of their universe.
The lagoon itself is their sports pitch, their cancha.
And a simple canoe is their daily public transport.
Here is where it gets really interesting to me. If a lagoon is a playing field and a canoe is essentially a bus, does this mean urbanism has nothing to do with modern infrastructure?
That's the big question.
Right. Like, does it have everything to do with how human beings just creatively hack their environment to survive and play?
I think so, yeah. It certainly challenges the hubris of top-down urban design.
We are so conditioned to think that urbanism requires paved roads, traffic lights, subterranean sewage systems.
But the Cienega Grande proves that urbanism is ultimately a flexible human behavior, not a rigid architectural blueprint.
The behavior is the infrastructure.
That is a perfect way to summarize it. It highlights human resilience. It shows this universal, non-negotiable need for community spaces.
Regardless of whether those spaces are made of asphalt or open water.
Exactly. The true infrastructure of a city is the network of relationships. It's the shared ingenuity of the people living there.
Because that canoe isn't just a piece of wood.
No, it's the circulatory system of their society. It creates predictable transit, social intersections, economic exchange.
It's doing the exact same job as a subway train in New York or London.
Exactly the same job.
Okay, wait, I have to play devil's advocate here because I'm getting slightly lost in the progression of his work.
Oh, how so?
Well, we started by talking about this macro level shift of migrating farmers altering city identities.
Right.
And then we moved to an entire water-based society hacking their environment on a large scale.
Yeah.
But then Duke suddenly pulls us completely indoors.
Ah.
He takes us away from the public sphere entirely and drops us into a tiny private room.
You're referring to the piece titled Tejiendonos, which translates to weaving ourselves.
Right. The one that focuses on a grandmother sitting quietly in a traditional house sewing.
It's a beautiful piece.
It is. He describes it as the absolute essence of continuity weaving time, memory, and affection, passing down a heritage without words. But I don't see the through line. I mean, we were just talking about massive industrial expansion in city grids. How on earth does a grandmother sewing quietly fit into a deep dive about urbanism?
I know, it seems like a contradiction at first.
Isn't urbanism fundamentally about the public sphere? The masses, the shared spaces, the streets?
It is, but you have to look closely at the membrane between private culture and public space.
Okay. Explain that.
The living room is where the memory is manufactured, but that memory doesn't stay locked inside the house.
Oh, I see.
In Duke's framework, the city doesn't exist independently of the private lives happening behind closed doors. The public street is actually just a massive overlapping collection of inherited private memories bleeding out into the open.
Because the street isn't a vacuum.
Exactly. Think about the mechanics of what's happening in that living room. The grandmother is transferring culture non-verbally.
She's instilling a sense of pacing, patience, familial duty.
Right. And when the children she sews for open the front door and step onto the pavement, they do not leave that heritage behind.
They carry that woven history with them into the public square.
They bring the private operating system out into the shared hardware of the city.
Okay, that makes so much sense now. That silent continuity is the foundational thread.
Without the private intimacy of the living room, the public street would just be empty pavement.
That clarifies the transition beautifully, because that mechanism, the private bleeding into the public, is exactly what he explores in his painting Miracoli, right?
Yes, exactly. He depicts a traditional street in Cali, Colombia, but he frames it as a space of emotional transit.
The architecture, the atmosphere, the people, they all hold these layers of private memory.
The street is heavy with the echoes of everyone who has ever walked it. They're all bringing their living room heritage out into the open.
And what makes Duke's analysis so compelling is that he proves this isn't just a localized phenomenon.
No, this emotional architecture exists globally.
He finds the exact same layers of memory in the ancient center of Seville, Spain,
where centuries of human movement dialogue directly with his own experience.
But maybe most strikingly, he finds it in spaces you would assume are completely devoid of this kind of soul.
Like Southern California.
Right. Which, historically, is the poster child for disconnected, car-centric, sprawl-based urban planning.
Oh, totally.
If any place is going to feel like a sterile industrial machine, it's a massive grid of freeways and strip malls.
But he finds the exact same Trastio there.
He zeroes in on the Mercado de Santa Monica market.
Yeah, he observes the entrepreneurs and the youth engaging in this daily scene of buying, selling, and interacting.
He notes how the sheer repetition of this scene elevates it from a simple economic chore into what he calls an urban ritual.
An urban ritual. Let's dig into the mechanics of that for a second.
Yeah, let's do it.
Think about your own local grocery store or the coffee shop you stop at on your commute. If you're just looking at it economically, you're exchanging currency for calories.
Right. Pure transaction.
But sociologically, the repetition of that act creates a temporal anchor in the city. You see the same vendors. You navigate the same aisles.
You participate in a shared choreography with your neighbors.
Exactly. And that routine completely changes the psychological geography of the space.
It creates a micro community within the anonymity of the sprawl.
It does. And Duke captures other subtle variations of this in California as well.
Like his elderly mother.
Right. He notes his elderly mother pausing to look at the architecture and listen to the birds in San Juan Capistrano. She's anchoring herself to the environment.
And he also observes a couple, Philip and his wife, riding bicycles through an adult mobile home neighborhood.
Which proves that the transit of life, the Trastio, doesn't stop just because you reach retirement age.
So the hardware of California is entirely different from the hardware of the Colombian lagoon or the streets of Seville.
But the human software running it, the need to establish ritual, to connect, to keep moving, is identical.
Which brings us to the culmination of his philosophy, I think.
Yeah, if we take all these disparate scenes together.
The migrating farmer refusing to be erased, the children hacking the lagoon, the grandmother weaving memory, the market vendors establishing ritual.
We have to ask ourselves, what is the ultimate conclusion about the nature of the city?
Well, Duke offers this really powerful climax to his reflections with a piece called El Balcón de la 50, The Balcony of the 50th.
It features a woman of the town who completely erupts into the space.
Yes. She's described as a symbol of character, of desire, and of strength. She commands her environment.
She serves as a vital reminder that the urban space is not just a passive backdrop that we shuffle through.
It's an arena for assertion.
Exactly. It's about identity and attitude. We don't just survive in a city, we impose ourselves upon it.
The planners may have drawn the grid, but the people walking the grid are constantly bending it to their will.
It's the ultimate conflict between the planner's map and human reality.
Right. I mean, we started this deep dive talking about traditional logic, the idea that cities expanded for industry, that they are machines built for economic output.
But taking everything Duke has laid out in Trastigo, That logic feels entirely hollow now.
It really does. The city isn't the concrete, and it isn't the economy.
No, the city is the friction between the physical space and the emotional luggage of the people moving through it.
So what does this all mean? It sounds like the city is just a giant blank journal.
Ooh, I like that.
The buildings, the roads, the water, that's just the paper.
Right.
The people, their attitude, their survival, their daily rituals, they are the ink. A city is nothing without the trace they leave behind.
I completely agree. Duke concludes his reflections by stating that gathering all these diverse works creates an intimate map of his own trastier, his own transiting through life.
And his final thesis is profound.
It is. He says the urban is not just the city. It is the stage where the gaze moves, where memory accumulates, and where existence leaves its trace.
Where existence leaves its trace. That is so good. If the traditional planner views the city as a finished product the moment the concrete dries, Duke views it as something that is never actually finished.
It is constantly being rewritten by the people leaving their trace.
Which really encourages you to critically rethink your own daily commute.
It demands that we stop looking at our environments purely through the lens of functionality.
When you wait for a train or walk down your street, you aren't just traversing a gap between point A and point B.
You are participating in a massive, ongoing urban ritual. You're surrounded by the accumulated memory and the bold, daily affirmations of identity happening on every single corner.
We have really journeyed today.
We covered a lot of ground.
Through Jairo Duke's artistic vision, we've dismantled the idea that urbanism is just about population density or industrial expansion.
It's trastio, the transit of life.
We've seen how a migrating peasant reshapes a metropolis with their dignity.
We've explored how a lack of digital infrastructure forces a community to physically hack a lagoon into a functioning society.
And we trace the invisible thread of a grandmother's private memory as it bleeds out to create the emotional atmosphere of a busy street in Cali or a bustling market in Santa Monica.
The physical structures of a city will inevitably change, right? Buildings will be demolished, roads will be rerouted.
Industries will rise and fall.
But the trace of human existence, the way we adapt, connect, and leave our emotional imprint on an environment, is the true foundation of urbanism.
Which brings us to a final thought for you to mull over. We've spent this time looking through the artist's eyes at how other people, farmers, children, grandmothers, vendors, have actively overwritten the rigid grids of their environments.
They're all leaving their permanent trace on the grand urban stage.
But the next time you walk out your front door, step onto the pavement and join the transit of life, ask yourself, what specific invisible trace of memory, habit, or identity are you personally leaving on your own city's map today?